Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. This is the podcast that aims to keep you caught up on the goings-on around the world, both the important things that are happening in the world and the less important things that are happening in the world. And this is the entertainment episode, which means we focus on what's going on in the world of entertainment. It's usually less serious stuff. It's stuff that isn't that important. And I have to say, you'll hear me mention at the start of recording this with Kian this morning that it's tricky at the moment to talk about things that aren't really that important when there are absolute atrocities continuing to happen in Gaza, specifically in Rafah this week. I'm finding it really difficult, as I'm sure many of you are. It's hard to watch and enjoy the fashion of the Met Gala while you know that it really doesn't matter and much more important things are happening in the world. You know, I saw a tweet that compared what's happening now to the Hunger Games, where you have, you know, the rich and wealthy and fortunate people of the world dressing up in costume and people in Palestine dying, children in Palestine dying. And it's really hard. I was talking to someone about it this morning and she said, you know, she was kind of angry that the Met Gala was happening at all. But then she said, but then I got dressed up and went to my friend's birthday party over the weekend. And really, how different is it? We are just living in such a strange, difficult, morally challenging time. I don't know if it's right to continue talking about stupid stuff in the context of, I mean, I don't even have the words to describe what's happening anymore. But I've done it, you know, I've recorded this episode and I'm going to give it to you. And, you know, I guess I just hope that maybe there are people I know who are being completely consumed and absorbed by the horrors of what's happening. And I know it's really impacting people's mental health. I certainly have experienced that myself, and maybe you need a break. And maybe this can be that break for you. One thing I wanted to note before we get into it, we do get into the rap beef that's been going on between Kendrick Lamar and Drake over the last few days. After we recorded, Macklemore released a new song. It's called Hins Hall, and which you may know is what some Columbia University students rechristened a building on their campus after Hind, who died absolutely tragically, a child who died in a horrific incident in Gaza. And the song is in support of protesters across the United States, student protesters, and in support of Palestine and all pro-Palestinian protesters, and really calling out the reality of what's happening in America right now. It's really powerful. I would highly recommend that you listen to the entire thing. I'm going to play you a little clip now so that you can get a flavor for it. But it really does make everything else that's been going on in the world of rap feel kind of stupid. And I have so much respect for him for speaking up and speaking out.
Yeah, the people, they won't leave. What is threatening about divesting and want a peace? The problem isn't the protests, it's what they're protesting. It goes against what our country is funding. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. When I was 7, I learned a lesson from Cuban Easy E. What was it again? Oh yeah, fuck the police.
So yeah, look, I mean, it's complicated, guys. I'm sure you feel the conflict too. But I have recorded this. Here it is for you. It's a chat about things that are really not that important in the context of a world that is dealing with some very, very important, serious, horrifying things. But I guess this is the world that we live in. And I hope you'll forgive me if you find it distasteful. But I do think that there needs to be some relief as well, I suppose. I've had lost days, weeks to this where I become completely embedded in it. And that feels in a way like the right thing to do, because how dare we continue to live our stupid lives and doing stupid things that don't matter. And I'm not saying that all of our lives don't matter, but like, you know, me posting an outfit video doesn't matter. You know, how can I continue to do all the normal stuff while there are children literally dying in the most awful circumstances? I don't know. I've lost days and weeks to that, but you also do need a bit of a break from that too. I'm just repeating myself now. I think you get what I'm saying. I hope we're on the same page. I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope you do enjoy this entertainment update. Well, Cian Sullivan, what a joy it is to have you back with me in my humble abode. We have got some beefy stories to talk about. Oh, beefy. Oh.
The puns are out the gate.
We do have some beefy stories to talk about this week. And also we've got the Met Gala to talk about, which is just so delightful.
Yes.
Although I found it kind of weird last night because I was watching, obviously, the people arriving. And then I was also simultaneously reading about Rafa and going, oh my God, this world. It is so completely fucked up.
Yeah.
But
what a jarring contrast of events.
I mean, truly. And then there are those who would say that, you know, it's on purpose, that like, you know, they know that people will be distracted by big events like this and, you know, they can get away with things. I don't know. I mean, you wouldn't know.
Same with the Super Bowl, right? Wasn't there similar invasion during the Super Bowl? And I mean, at least, you know, there's a whole lot of luck over there in politics, but at least this is kind of something that happens anyway. But
yeah.
Once we don't take our eye off the ball, I guess that's
important. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but just to, I think it's worth acknowledging that normal life going on and the absolute atrocities that are happening in Gaza at the same time and elsewhere around the world is always going to be something that I personally struggle with. So if you're struggling with that, I get that too. But also these things exist, and this episode in particular is about this kind of fluff and frippery. So that's what we're going to get into. Yeah.
Life is tough. It's okay to take refuge in the frivolous at times.
I agree. Okay, let's start with the Met Gala, because obviously that's what happened overnight. People are waking up this morning to photographs from the event. You said to me, it's about the outfits, really, isn't it? Yeah. And it is.
The theme was the Garden of Time. Mm. What would you, if you now were working on a look, what would be your inspiration for that, would you say now?
Well, I think like it's also linked to Sleeping Beauty. That's the context, because the exhibition that it's linked to in the Met Gala, because if anybody hasn't, I mean, first of all, if you haven't watched the first Monday in May, the documentary, highly recommend if you want to get some kind of context and background to how it works. I've watched it probably 5 or 6 times.
Okay, cool.
I'm a slut for a Where's fashion doc.
Go find it somewhere.
It was
online.
On Netflix. Okay. Like it's not hard to find. It's from 2016, so it's 8 years old. Right now it's telling me it's like rentable Apple TV, apparently. I don't know. You'll find it. Yeah. It's not hard. But it's cool because basically the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Met, has an annual fashion exhibition that has a theme. And then the Met Gala's theme is taken from that exhibition. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So it was Sleeping Beauty's reworking fashion. So I guess it was, taking fashion from over the years and
so
putting a new spin.
You're thinking kind of fairy tale garden. Mm. My favorite looks were the ones who went dark. Like, I think that I really enjoyed all of the kind of fairy tale nods, like people pulling things from fairy tales. Yeah. I think all of that was amazing. Like, I loved Elle Fanning in particular. I thought she looked incredible. Did you see her?
I saw them all. I scrolled through that Vogue documentary for 216. I can't remember Elle Fanning.
Elle Fanning was wearing a dress that almost looked like it was made of glass.
Okay.
And to me, it felt, or ice. So apparently it's the Elle magazine has described it as a bit like frozen flowers about to be plucked by songbirds. It looked like glass or ice, a drape, beautifully draped on her body. Her skin was gleaming. I dropped the product list. I really want to know what was going on her skin. And then she has these kind of birds, like a la Snow White's friends, coming off her shoulders. I loved it. I also loved Lana Del Rey. Did you see Lana Del Rey?
Yes, I saw Lana Del Rey. She's sort of this sort of wood nymph kind of... She's behind this mesh and it kind of like the twigs are kind of worked through into the body of the dress.
She's wearing kind of like a headpiece of twigs that upholds this mesh, which I think is a nod to... Is it Alexander McQueen? Yeah. Sorry, it is Alexander McQueen by Sean McGurr, actually. Sean McGurr of Bayside in Dublin. And I actually loved it as a look. Like, yeah, I think it's incredible. And but again, like the darkness is what I liked. I don't know. Like J-Lo, for example, and J-Lo was wearing Schiaparelli and I love Schiaparelli. I love Daniel Roseberry, who's the head designer for Schiaparelli. I love everything that Schiaparelli does. And the dress that she wore is beautiful.
And she looks amazing.
But I just feel like I've seen it on her before.
Yeah. I was like, that's very J-Lo. And it doesn't really feel like it fits the theme.
No, I mean, when you look at the design, like if you look at kind of some of the up close shots and stuff, the design is stunning. Like I love the kind of shoulder work.
It's a nude and silver diamonded dress that it's kind of like.
It's just J-Lo.
It's got like the pattern kind of looks like the back of a butterfly almost, the way it is, like thin lines that form these sort of curves. But yeah, it is incredibly Jennifer Lopez.
I know everybody was excited about Zendaya, and Zendaya looked amazing. Zendaya wore two outfits,
she was a host, I think, because I think her and Bad Bunny and a few others co-chair. Were hosts. So I think they had multiple looks.
Yeah, I mean, that still feels like cheating to me, to be honest, because she came out and did the red carpet again. Like, whatever about changing when you get in there. Like, you know, if you come out and do the red carpet again, that feels like cheating to me.
One of my favorites was Gigi Hadid. Did you see?
I did. And I think it's beautiful. I just don't think it's that interesting.
Oh, I loved it. Like it's this Tom brilliant Bryan, white right? with a black... I cut off the name.
That's okay. I'm pretty sure it's Tom Bryan.
Pretty white, ruffled and like a black trim. I think it just looked very like Spanish sort of... what do you call it, Faria style look, and then off the shoulder. I really liked the train on that.
Oh, I think, like, don't get me wrong, I think it's beautiful. I'm just not sure it's like, I don't know. I just always want things to be more exciting.
Well, more the cover photo of the Vogue document, Vogue article of all the looks is Cardi B, who is a massive black 360 tulle train. Like, this is kind of what the Met Gala has become, is just bigger and bigger and bigger. Remember Rihanna's long sort of yellow thing that people photoshopped a pizza onto?
But Rihanna's thing was stunning. Yeah. And I feel like this is just trying to be that, but it's not. Like, it's just a really, really long black dress.
Yeah. But for me, it's very drag because it's just so over the top. Like, how long did they have to stand there to get that perfect before they took the photos? Like, she must have been there for 40 minutes.
But also, how did she walk anywhere? Like, I saw a few people having to be lifted up the steps. Yeah. Which, I mean, I love a high comp and glamour and all the rest. But, like, what's going on there?
There was a good few Irish people not just, like, designers, but... You know, Barry Keoghan was there in his golden suit with a little ruff and everything like
that. I mean, he's dressed like the Artful Dodger on a night out. Is that a bad thing? I don't know.
The Artful Dodger, once he's made his money, but hasn't lost the style.
I love Barry Keoghan, by the way. And this is not me disrespecting Barry Keoghan.
And his girlfriend was there, Sabrina Carpenter.
Were they seen together?
I didn't see photos of them together.
Yeah, no, me neither. What did Sabrina Carpenter wear? I didn't see her.
I don't have it here, but it was kind of it kind of just looked like the espresso cover, like it was kind of not that blue and white, but then there was not a black train or vice versa. It wasn't great.
J.W. Anderson had a fantastic troupe of people with him, including Ireland's own Iowa Debris.
Yes,
absolutely thrilled to see that she went with an Irish designer. And I really liked what she was wearing as well. Like it was, a good few people had, and actually Dan Levy was also dressed by J.W. Anderson, and he had a similar kind of vibe, which is like flowers all the way on the bottom and then kind of an ombre effect up to a more simple top.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Like, I mean, I think they were all beautiful. I haven't been like fully gagged really by very much, but I think that, to borrow a term from drag, maybe actually Tyla
Oh yeah.
You know, Tyla,
South African singer-songwriter.
Exactly.
Extraordinary.
Make me sway.
Make me holla.
Yeah. Her. She wore a dress that looks like sand, and then she carried an hourglass because it was like the sands hourglass. Of time.
That makes sense. And that's so in her vibe and everything as well.
Yeah, and her body is...
Oh, she's, yeah, insane.
I mean,
insane.
It's
absolutely insane.
So it looked incredible.
I enjoyed Sydney Sweeney giving us Billie Eilish inspired guy with the black.
I wig. Did not.
Okay, no?
At all enjoy Sydney Sweeney. Okay.
Like, and the black leather gloves.
No.
More for, because it's a departure of a look for her, but I.
Yeah.
And like a lot of the men were mostly just wearing black suits. I mean, Andrew Scott is now in his arms, Eric getting his arms out a lot of the time. Because, I mean, if you have them, flaunt them.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed Kieran Culkin's suit.
Yes.
Which is kind of like a kind of cream two-piece. But it has these like pink, like pastel pink, blues and yellow sort of birds imprinted on them.
Yeah. I liked that too.
And some like salmon suede shoes.
Anyway, this is obviously not a visual medium, so
as someone who talks about drag queens' looks all the time, I know how difficult this can be. So also, the elusive Rita Ora doesn't look like her at all there.
Yeah, Rita Ora didn't look like herself, but I did like what she was wearing. I thought it was quite cool. Kind of nude panels on the side, and then basically like long threads.
Long beaded?
Yeah, beaded bits.
Braids kind of thing. It'll be interesting to see how it moves, but yeah, she's kind of like done like a wet look hair and very minimal makeup that she kind of looks androgynous.
I will say, I thought Ariana Grande looked incredibly boring on the red carpet. Again, like, sorry, the ponytail. Someone said to me a while ago, oh, I think it was James Kavanaugh, was like, the ponytail. He's like, I can't. It gives him the ick. And I kind of am like, at this point, like, please, can you give us something else? I thought she looked actually much better. She performed at the event inside and she wore a much more interesting, in my opinion, outfit to perform, and she looked like a kind of woodland fairy, which is just, I don't know, I'm just, yeah, I wasn't into it. Anyway, you're going to Google these looks. You have your own opinions. At the end of the day, all of these people got dressed up and I hope they all felt really great on the night. But, you know, the whole point of the Met Gala is to talk about the outfits.
I'm surprised by some of the celebs who were there. There were some that I thought were, you know, not exactly riding the zeitgeist.
Like, oh, really?
Gwendolyn Christie? What's she doing these days?
Well, Gwendolyn Christie had a massive fashion moment this year, you see, because she was kind of one of the stars of... sorry, I just want to make sure I get this right.
Did she do some sort of an androgynous Dior.
No, she did this thing... sorry, hang on.
And also, Sienna Miller, what's she doing these days?
Sienna Miller's back.
Oh, she?
She's back
in a big way, baby.
No, she is. She really is back. Okay, okay. Yeah, I don't, because her fashion is back as well.
That's
like, she
true.
Was the queen of that boho kind of style of the early 2000s, and that's
back. Because Jude Law was also
It was Margiela, sorry.
Okay.
Gwendolyn Christie was like the main star at Paris Fashion Week in the Margiela show in January. It was a huge fashion moment because the show was all about... Well, it had a mix of bodies, and it was like from, you know, both body types in terms of like size and body shape. You know, there were people who had various different kind of shaped bodies, and I think there were people who had prosthesis, and it was a really interesting show. And they really used Gwendolyn Christie because obviously her shape and size is quite unusual because she's so
seen
tall.
That. Yes, it's kind of almost Marie Antoinette sort of
exactly.
Inspiring.
And they really kind of sucked in the waists with corsets and made everything really exaggerated, and it was really incredible. So she had this massive fashion moment. So I think that's why she was there, and she's continuing to have a fashion moment, which I love. Like, I love that. But yeah, I think I actually always really enjoy looking at who's there and kind of trying to get to the bottom of why they're there, you know?
Me too.
Which it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Normally it's just because they're hot right now.
Exactly. Exactly. And I bet there's loads of people that they're like, oh God, we have to invite them. Yeah. Like, I wonder how much they really wanted to invite the Kardashians this year.
I was wondering, because I was seeing the Jenners, and then I was wondering, was Kim there? And I did see Kim then eventually, and I...
What did you think?
Because that was a...
Whatever. Kim was wearing like a jumper with a corset.
Yeah.
A bolero. No thanks, Kim.
Yeah. Because that was a long kind of fight for them to get there. And I'm surprised they haven't been dropped off yet. But.
I have to say, I am obsessed with Kim Kardashian's hair. You probably haven't seen any of this. So as a former bleached blonde girly, I know the perils of having a full head of pre-lightener.
Yeah.
And it is not for... The
faint-hearted.
Yes. Oh my God. I'm so sorry. I'm brain dead.
Gotcha.
It's not for the faint-hearted at all. So it's really hard to have very blonde hair.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of maintenance and it's very hard on your hair. Literally your scalp blisters as it's being dyed. That's how hard the chemicals are on your skin.
Yeah.
So you can imagine what they're doing to your hair. And if you don't do it very carefully and very slowly, your hair will end up like candy floss and it will literally come off your head. It will break and come off your head. And I believe that that's what happened to one Miss Kimberly Kardashian, because her hairstylist posted this photo of the back of her head in like a wet bun.
Okay.
And the only reason that it would be wet like that is if it's too delicate to dry. And it also looked quite short. So I'd say it was drenched in a mask, some sort of hair mask.
Yeah.
And then she posted these photos of her hair short and wet again, with some sort of like a purple toner in it, it looked like, which again is like obvious. Masking. Or possibly hiding a yellow. It's possible that they didn't get to the full blonde. So it's kind of yellow. So they put a purple, massive purple toner on it and left it. So she posted these photos. Her hair is in bits. Like it's all short and broken. You can see that it's broken. I've had this hair. That's how I know. Mm. Like I've been down this road. So I was like, oh no, it's all gone wrong. And then the next day she posts herself in perfect long blonde hair, clearly a wig, like Drag Race has never seen the likes of it. And then last night she's on the Met Gala red carpet with long, long, beautiful blonde hair. Yeah. She looks gorgeous, but it's definitely a wig.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they fucked it, I think.
There. Yeah.
And as someone,
but it's nice to know that even at that level,
you
can still have hair faux pas.
100%. 100%. Like I remember when I was going through my pre-lightener journey or my bleach journey, I remember saying to my hairdresser, "How has Gwen Stefani had this hair for all this time?" And he was like, "I don't know." And now I know. Wigs.
Wigs, yeah.
Must be. Okay, anyway, sorry. That was a real tangent on Kim Kardashian's hair.
I'd love you just like...
Current obsession.
Gagging now. Gwen Stefani.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Annie. This for me is the story of the week. Kendrick versus Drake. Rap beef is back.
Yes. Okay.
You've done the research. Keenan has a full page of notes.
Yeah, full page of notes.
I'm just going
to
let you
go. I've listened to all the songs. I've taken out the highlights of each. If you want to know more, there's hour-long episodes on each of these songs on YouTube that you can listen to your heart's content. But hopefully after this, you'll get the gist and you won't need to spend the time. Also, big trigger warning at the top of this. Physical abuse, sexual abuse, domestic abuse, colorism. A lot of things in here aren't pleasant. Yeah, I do feel like this is the male version of the Real Housewives franchise. This. Right?
I love that comparison. And actually, you're right, because the enthusiasm with which men have taken to this...
Mm-hmm.
is reflective of, say, Scandoval or something like that.
Yeah, It's love celebrated that. Toxicity from famous people.
Excellent.
Right, so it goes back to October, the 6th of October. Drake released an album called For All the Dogs. On that, he had a song called First Person Shooter, which featured another rapper called J. Cole. Allegedly, he also approached Kendrick Lamar to be on the song. Kendrick said no. On the song, J. Cole raps about the big three in the rap world right now, which is Kendrick, Aubrey, and J. Cole. Then on the 26th of March of this year, Like That was released. That's a song by Metro and Future and Metro Boomin. Future is a Atlanta rapper. Metro Boomin is just a producer. He's kind of like a Pharrell or a Timbaland of the current moment. He's one of the most prominent trap producers of the decade and the decade before. He doesn't rap. He just makes the music. But he's kind of a name in and of himself that, like, the songs, he'll be as like a lead artist on the songs, kind of like a Calvin Harris or whatever. So Kendrick Lamar does a verse on that song and he says, F the big three, it's just big me. And he compares Drake to Michael Jackson and himself to Prince. And he's like, you might be Michael Jackson, but I'm Prince because I'm more worthy in my music and, you know, I'm more of a poet. So that's kind of the initiation of the beef. So then J. Cole pipes in with a song called 7 Minute Drill. Do you want to know how long that song is?
How long,
Ian? 3.5 minutes.
Is it? Yeah.
J. Cole isn't happy with the diss and compares Kendrick Lamar to The Simpsons to say you started off great but you've fallen off. He said your second album was crap but your third one was great. And that was kind of that song. So that came out on the 5th of April.
Not true, patently untrue. Yeah.
That's the Pimple Butterfly he's coming for there.
It's an incredible album.
Yes. It's the 5th of April, I think, is a Friday. By the Sunday, J. Cole has apologized for it. And he's like, that was unbecoming of me. And then he's deleted it by the following Friday. He's like, yeah.
I find that bit really makes me laugh.
I'd like to exclude myself from this narrative.
Yeah, which I never asked to be in.
Yeah. So he deletes it on the 12th of April. By the 13th of April, Drake now releases his diss track towards Kendrick Lamar called Push Ups. It's based on this refrain of drop and give him 50, which is kind of like what you might say to somebody, you know, an army man might shout at you to go, you know, do some push-ups. But also it is a play on drop being to drop music and to give him 50. Allegedly, Kendrick Lamar used to have to give 50% of all the money that he earned from his music to his label. So we drop and give him 50%, basically. On the song, he has a go at Kendrick for compromising his artistic integrity, for having to do verses for Maroon 5 and for Taylor Swift. He says, if you know, throwing back to the Prince reference before, if you're a prince, then I'm a king. And I make more money than you. My songs stream more than you. You are small and you have small feet. So just want to dwell here at this moment. This all started with you've got small feet.
Well, yeah.
Then on the same day, Rick Ross, who's not really a big name really outside of the rap world, he does a diss track. I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but basically he says that Drake has fake abs. He got plastic surgery. He's got fake abs.
There's been rumors. These are all things that have been rumored.
Yes. There's also allegations that Drake has got a BBL as well. Like Kate Middleton. So that is, that is the 13th of April. Another thing to add here is that Kendrick hasn't ever done a diss track towards anyone in particular. Like, he's done kind of subliminals and verses like that, but he hasn't released a diss track. So at this time, people are talking about, is Kendrick going to drop a diss track? Drake is kind of needling him to try get him to release something. No word from Kendrick. So almost a week later, on the 19th of April, Drake releases another diss track, this time called Taylor Made Freestyle. Taylor spelled like Taylor Swift. And he uses AI filters. So he raps, but he uses an AI filter to make him sound like Tupac and another one to make him sound like Snoop. Tupac is significant because Kendrick's album, To Pimp a Butterfly, is all about him sort of talking to the ghost of Tupac, who was a huge inspiration for him.
It's pretty ballsy to do, to like pretend you're Tupac.
Yeah.
Exactly. Dead icon.
Whatever
Tupac.
About Snoop Dogg, Tupac, yeah. You know. But these are also
no, like Snoop Dogg did a Just See Dad. You know what I mean? It's a little less precious.
Exactly.
No disrespect, by the way. Get your bags, Snoop Dogg.
But he's needling Drake, basically trying to get him to come out. He's saying that Kendrick is afraid to drop his music because Taylor Swift is about to release her album, The Tortured Poets Society. He says that Taylor Swift is the biggest gangster in the music industry, that Drake himself had to move his album because he was afraid of clashing with her. And yeah, you're afraid to release because of Taylor. Then on the 26th of April, Drake has to take the song down because Tupac's estate rang up and said, you're not allowed to use Tupac's voice.
Obviously not.
Snoop didn't care.
Obviously not.
So that is the 26th of April. Still no word from Kendrick until the 30th of April, which is last Tuesday, right? So bear in mind, all of this I'm going to go through now all took place since last Tuesday.
This is when it gets really good.
Yeah, or bad, depending on you. So Kendrick releases his diss track, his first ever diss track towards Drake. It's called Euphoria. It kind of opens up with, you don't tell any lies about me and I won't tell any truth about you. He says, I hate the way you talk, the way you walk, the way you dress. It's not just me. It's how the whole black culture feels.
Now let me say I'm the biggest hater. I hate the way that you walk, the way that you talk. I hate the way that you dress. I hate the way that you sneak this. If I catch flight, it's gonna be direct. We hate the bitches you fuck, cause they confuse themselves with real women. Then notice I said we. It's not just me. I'm what the culture feeling.
You are not, you will never feel like you are black enough. You, Little Yachty, who's another rapper, is your ghostwriter. When you say the N-word, it is cringeworthy. You tried to cease and desist my verse on Like That and you failed. That Drake is calling people trying to get tea on Kendrick from Kendrick's home neighborhood, but Kendrick, you won't get anything on me because I'm a saint. You have dropped $500K on a NDA case of somebody who's coming for you. I didn't have to do anything like that. I'm too busy raising my son and you wouldn't know anything about that, basically. Of all the songs in this, this one I think is actually the most listenable song.
Yeah, I think it's a good song. And I think the points, it's also like, I mean, he's listing off the things he hates about him is pretty intense when he does that. And then also saying basically that he's not a good father and doesn't raise his son. Like that's, you know, it's pretty, you're cutting him pretty deep there.
Yes.
It's pretty vicious.
Yeah, 100%. So that's last Tuesday. Then last Friday, Kendrick goes back to back, as they say, releasing an additional one called 616 in LA. This time produced by Jack Antonoff, which is significant because of the Taylor reference earlier on. Mm. And he's basically in this, I find when they go back to back, the second song doesn't have as much kind of tea. It's more kind of based on the music. But he's basically saying, you've got a snitch on your team, which is important. We'll come back to that. Mm. Your whole team must hate you. They're saying you deserve all this, you know, dragging in the public space. And you've put $100,000 into my local neighborhood trying to get tea on me. And, you know, you're not going to get anything, basically.
I mean, that's also, again, like being like, you're even your people don't like you and you're trying to pay for shit about me.
Yeah.
Like your people are coming to me with stuff about you and they're your people.
Yeah.
And you're paying people to try and get money on me and or get info on me and you're not getting nothing.
So it's interesting to point here that in 2018, Drake had a beef with Pusha T. And that beef ended because Pusha T basically revealed to the world that Drake had been hiding a son. And found this picture of Drake when he was in his early 20s in blackface.
Yeah.
And this really kind of changed the game of rap beef, that it's now kind of all about spilling tea and secrets. Whereas in the 90s and in the previous rap beefs, it was more just about lyrical flow and being mean and nasty. So I think that has kind of changed. And that's kind of why, if these allegations are true, that Drake is looking for money, he thinks he'll win it by finding some tea on Kendrick, basically.
Yeah.
So that is Friday, the 3rd of May, that 616 in LA comes out. That comes out at 6:16 in the morning. By that evening, Drake has released a response to this called Family Matters. Mm. And he says that Kendrick, who is engaged to a woman called Whitney, they've been engaged since 2015. He alleges that Kendrick tries to look good by being engaged to a mixed queen, but is constantly cheating on her with white women, and he's afraid of being seen with men more black than him, and that he's actually more like Michael Jackson because he wishes that he's white. That his manager, Dave Free, who's also his creative director, is actually one of the fathers of his kids. That he is domestically abusive to his wife, Whitney, or his fiancée, Whitney. And that you called the Tupac estate to try to get the song pulled down.
Mm.
So it's getting nastier here.
Yeah. And like, look, you know, it's not for me as a white woman in Ireland to comment on the kind of race aspects of it, but they feel, you can imagine that that kind of stuff would be quite hurtful.
And it's interesting that that's coming into play. It's interesting that a lot of these things that these men are saying back to each other is, you know, I'm more black than you, I'm more black than you, and the colorism that's in that. And we know that in minority communities, we turn on each other for not being gay enough or being too gay or not being black enough for being too black. Like that happens a lot of the time. And we're seeing it here in the text of these speeches. So that releases before midnight on Friday evening. 37 minutes later, just past midnight, Kendrick releases Meet the Grahams. So Drake's name is Aubrey Graham, basically. So this is addressed to his family. So this is addressed to his son Adonis, who was revealed in the previous beef, his mum Sandra, his father Dennis, and it's also addressed to an 11-year-old daughter who is hidden from the public. He says that Drake is basically, he apologizes to the kids that your dad's basically a piece of shit. He apologizes to Sandra that her son is awful. And then he admonishes the dad for raising such an awful man. He's addicted to gambling. He's an alcoholic. He hates black women. He's addicted to sex. He has sick thoughts. He likes younger women. He has predators on his payroll. And he's basically shouldn't be battling with Kendrick because he has his whole life, basically. He should be battling with himself and his own addictions and his own sick thoughts.
The daughter, like the suggestion that Drake has a daughter who he doesn't acknowledge is, intense.
Intense.
to say the least.
And the last line is like, I'm sure you've got other kids out there that you don't love either, kind of thing. Then later that day, Kendrick goes back to back again with another song called Not Like Us, which is... People are saying is like the other songs were kind of diss tracks and that they were kind of like a kind of relatively cheap beat. They didn't really have much of a song structure. They're not like songs you'd listen to for enjoyment, but that this final song is basically has like the danceability of a Drake song, but also like the bars of a Kendrick song. Mm. So he's kind of like trying to play Drake in his own game.
Mm.
Not a whole lot of new things there, but it's kind of like if those four songs, you know, Drake popped in the middle there, but if you, I think you're supposed to see these four songs as like a narrative arc.
Mm.
So he like gets the crux of his argument and is making a danceable song at the same time. And people were out on Sunday night, like dancing to this, and DJs were mixing it into Work by Rihanna and stuff like that. But the context of this is pretty, you know, he accuses Drake of colonizing the culture of Atlanta for money, which is Atlanta is the hub and the center of hip hop in the South of America, especially the trap scene. And Drake had an album called Certified Lover Boy, and Kendrick says more like Certified Pedophile, which is 100% slander, if not true, and like could get into a lot of trouble. I'm thinking of Lawrence Fox in the UK, who has to pay 90 grand, whatever, to three people for calling them pedophiles. So a big shot to take if he's not backed up.
I'm not expert on the defamation laws in America, but it's really picking up when you're touching the microphone.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'm not expert on the defamation laws in America. I know they're looser, certainly, than they are here. But, I mean, this song is being heard all over the world. So it'd be interesting to know kind of what would happen there. I mean, look, there's been conversation about 100%. Drake's friendships with younger women for a long time. Himself and Millie Bobby Brown, apparently very good pals when Millie Bobby Brown
Bella
was much younger.
Harris is a worst case because he came kind of public with her as his girlfriend when, like... She just turned 18, and then there's pictures of the two of them from when she was 16.
Yeah, like, you know.
So there's definitely has been smoke to the fire that Kendrick is talking about here on this one.
Mm.
Finally, then, on Sunday, Drake did one final response called The Heart Part 6, which is a play on a series of songs that Kendrick has released called The Heart Part 1, 2, 3, 4, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And he says, remember you said I had a mole on my team? We planted the whole 11-year-old daughter thing as a false flag situation, and you bought it. I've never slept with teenagers. I never slept with Millie Bobby Brown. His kind of defense is, I'm too famous to do that and not get arrested. So if I had done it, I would have been arrested. Which I think we know isn't true.
Yeah. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that the more famous you are, the less likely it is that you would get arrested, Drake. That's a bit of a cell phone.
I would never look at teenagers. Now, this bit is, you threatened to pull your music off Spotify to support R. Kelly, which is actually true. So you are a hypocrite. There's a song, is it called Mama I'm Broke or something like that, where Drake or Kendrick on his latest album discusses that there was kind of like a child abuser in his family and his mother was afraid that he had molested Kendrick, but he hadn't. So Drake obviously thinks, or Drake makes reference to this and maybe forgets that Kendrick denied being abused or thinks he's lying about it, but basically says, oh, it makes sense why you're so angry about if you think that I'm having sex with kids because you were molested and now I feel sorry for you. So I'm going to drop out of this drama now. I'm denying my allegations, but I don't see your fiance denying the allegations that you hit her. You know, she follows your manager on Instagram, but she doesn't follow you. He's always liking photos of the kids. You haven't been seen with your kids in 6 months. I don't care if you release 100 more tracks, I'm done. If you had got your facts straight, you might have been a worthy opponent, but at least everything I said is true. So that's where it ends on Sunday. I think that's the end of it based on people who know more about this than me. Yeah. But it's, in the grand scheme of things, it's toxic and it's messy. And I think they've both lost something in the eye of the non-hip hop public, because if either of those allegations are true, like, they're pretty serious allegations on both ends. But in the world of hip hop, like, rap beef is culture, and cultural hip hop commentators think that this could have extended the careers of both of the artists by 5 to 10 years, because that is kind of how the industry works.
And relevance and all the rest. Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's so interesting. It's so vicious.
It is very vicious.
Like, imagine someone was out there making a song about all the worst things about you. I think I would just, like, go to a desert island.
Yeah.
Like, and just never come back. I'd be like, and they put them to rhyme. Okay, sorry. Sorry. Never like, mind.
Some of these songs are being streamed so much, like, they're getting into the charts. They're like number 15 and stuff on the charts. So,
well,
like,
the fact even that we're talking about it, and because I was aware of this, and I was kind of like, oh, I was kind of thinking, should we talk about it? And then I was like, it's a little bit niche. And then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I thought, you know, we better explain it, because lots of people will have heard that there's something going on. And that's the whole point of this, is to try and explain, you know, the stories that people might have heard about. But yeah, even the fact that we are talking about it, not that I don't like hip hop, I do. I love hip hop, but it still wouldn't, you know, it's not our culture.
Yeah.
But it has extended far beyond the hip hop world.
And you have two of the biggest names in the last 20 years who are coming for each other.
Absolutely. In music. In quick succession. Not just as in hip hop, in music. Yeah, like, two of the biggest names in music. Yeah. It's wild. It's wild. Anyway, hopefully you feel a little bit more up to date. Thank you, Keane.
No problem.
Extensive research. I'm much appreciated. Okay, let's quickly hit a couple of more stories before we finish. Emily Blunt has said she felt sick after kissing certain actors. So Emily Blunt did this interview on the Howard Stern show that I then saw her being interviewed about on Jimmy
Fallon?
Kimmel. Okay. Who's the good one?
That's relatively.
Yeah.
I think Kimmel's better than Fallon.
Yeah, I think Kimmel is the one who wasn't on SNL, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so she was on Jimmy Kimmel, and they talked about this interview with Howard Stern for ages, because Jimmy Kimmel was like, oh, you guys had, like, amazing chemistry, like, you really got on. And she was like, yeah, we talked for half an hour on the phone afterwards. Like, there obviously was a connection. But they were talking about chemistry, which I thought was really interesting, because I've always wondered about this. Like, you're an actor, you have to, like, fake romance and kiss and, like, sometimes a lot more. And, you know, someone, what if you hate them?
Yeah, I mean, isn't there those stories of, is it like, was it like The Bill or something like that, or is it Hollyoaks, where these actors hated each other, so they went and they had loads of garlic and they, like, made their breath horrible to try to kiss each other? But yeah, Emily Blunt said that, like, sometimes you might have an effortless rapport with somebody and it doesn't translate on screen, and then sometimes you have chemistry on screen with people that basically make you her want to throw up. She says, I find something I love about everybody, a nice laugh or how they speak to people, and I just lean into that to try create the chemistry.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
But I thought that, you know, she talked about the fact that, for me, what was most interesting was that she said, I've had chemistry with people who I have not had a good time working with them. And I think that's really interesting. She said, chemistry is a strange thing. It's an ethereal thing that you can't really bottle up and buy or sell. It's like, it's there or it's not. And I suppose it's true, isn't it? Like, sometimes you do just meet someone and there's, like, an electricity.
Yeah.
But, like, it's rare. So, of course, you wouldn't have it with every actor that you ever worked with.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think it's an aspect of rom-com era of movies that, like, we don't really appreciate from an acting perspective. Like, people like Jennifer Aniston are so good on screen. They create these chemistry. I think Emily Blunt is particularly good at it as well.
Like, she is, yeah.
There's an element of creating that, you know, romance, or even Jennifer Lopez is quite good at coming across charismatic on screen, that you don't really give the props to when it comes to acting. It's all about big dramatic moments and tears, whereas, like, I'm sure this is just as difficult from an actor's perspective.
Jeff Goldblum is not leaving his children any money, which I just love to hear for some reason.
Yeah, he joins the likes of Daniel Craig, Gordon Ramsay, Elton John, all men, I note, in saying that he won't be providing for his kids financially when they grow up. He says that they've got to row their own boat. I wonder what that looks like, though. He's, like, not setting up a trust fund for them, but I also, like, he's not going to push them out in the street.
Yeah, I wonder about that too. But one of the reasons that I think I find these stories kind of interesting is because my dad, I recently said this in a TikTok comment, and it has gotten thousands of likes and comments on people laughing about it. But my dad, when I was 21, told me that I needed to be out of the house by Q4. those are the literal words he used. You need to be out of the house by Q4. And I was like, okay. And he was like, look, I wasn't in college. I was working.
Yeah.
And he was like, and actually it was, you know, 2003 when you actually could move out of your parents' house. And he said, there's things you won't learn living here that you need to learn out in the world. And it felt incredibly harsh and still feels harsh sometimes when I think about it, especially when I look at the lives of my younger sisters. But
I like the Q4 as if it's like a financial Q4, meeting.
But this is the thing. So the TikTok I commented on was this girl who was like, she was sharing screenshots of texts with her corporate dad is what she called him. Yeah. And it was all the same kind of thing. Q4, end of Q4. But that kind of tough love, I think, is important. And especially when you're talking about like Hollywood or whatever, you know, and if you're raising your children saying, look, I'm not going to be paying for everything. Like you need to kind of figure out your own life. You can still then leave them all your money, but just as long as they grow up thinking that's not an option.
Have to have an appreciation of money, 100%. And like, his kids are quite young. I think they're like 8 and 4 or something. So obviously they have a good bit to go. And I think even with anyone at that age, no matter how wealthy their parents are,
they should be paying for their own stuff at that stage, surely.
But I know this kind of reminds me of Brooklyn Beckham. And wasn't there like a whole thing like, oh, we have to teach Brooklyn Beckham the value of money, and he was a barista. And I mean, look at him.
Everything about Brooklyn Beckham is embarrassing.
So that hopefully Jeff Goldblum can do it better than the Beckhams. Yes. But yeah,
Jeff Goldblum, I believe in you.
Brooklyn Beckham is a nepo kid who like tries his hand at everything and fails dramatically.
It's not for me. Okay, then I wanted to touch on Derek Blasberg's birthday party. Now, if anybody doesn't know who Derek Blasberg is, you clearly don't follow celebrities with the same kind of completely obsessive eye that I do.
This is your
and
weekly
frankly
moment.
I respect you. Honestly though, I have been following Derek Blasberg for like 20 years. He is so fascinating. He seems to be a guy who has literally made a career out of being friends with famous people. Because all the jobs that he's had, you know, in recent years have been like these kind of like high concept, like, you know, head of ideas at Instagram or like head
of
whatever
on YouTube.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they're meaningless, really. You know what I mean? It's about connections is what it's about. And he has just made so many famous people his friends. So it was his birthday party. Sorry, you don't mind that I'm completely taking
it. No, go ahead. I didn't know who this man was.
It was his birthday party. He turned 42. So he's nearly the same age as me. Maybe that's what it is as well. So here are some of the people who were at his birthday party. Kate Hudson. Oh, sorry. It was a joint birthday party with Kate Hudson and Jennifer Meyer, who's has a lot of famous friends, jewelry designer. Kris Jenner, Corey Gamble, Jeff Bezos, and Lauren Sanchez. We've got Anne Hathaway and her husband, Emily Ratajkowski, Carly Kloss, Emma Chamberlain, Joan Smalls, Elisa Gonzalez, and Jemima Kirk. So what I love about this is you're talking the very, very mainstream, like Kris Jenner, and then you've got you know, kind of hot models who've been around for a while, like Carly Kloss. But then you've got Emma Chamberlain, who's like young and hot.
Yeah.
So he's still making these friends. Do you know what I mean?
Violet Chachkin got Mick from Drag Race were there.
Exactly. And also someone like Jemima Kirk, who is incredibly cool.
Yeah.
But not that kind of well known. Her sister was Jessa in Girls, and Jemima Kirk is just very, very cool. Cool girl, it girl. Jenna Lyons was there, my beloved Jenna Lyons from The Real Housewives of New York, Andy Cohen, Demi Moore, Jake Gyllenhaal. Like,
you missed the most important one.
Sorry, who have I missed?
Paul McCartney's grandson, Arthur Alistair Donald.
I do apologize.
Bit of respect for Arthur, please, Louise.
But just, I want to go on like one night out with him to find out what is it that is so special about him. Because he obviously is great. Like, they obviously love him. He is flat out commenting on famous people's Instagrams because I've been watching this for many years. So he's definitely bigging up the girls. And it seems to be the girls mainly who he's palling around with. But his charisma must be like top tier. And then when I was looking at this, I was thinking of another guy who I learned about on Who Weekly, Michael, at Michael.
Yeah.
Seems to have deleted his Instagram, which is really tragic. I started following it a long time ago because he's another guy. He's like a Canadian real estate guy who has made loads and loads of famous friends. And I think that probably happened because lots of American actors go to Canada to
film in Toronto. Yes,
exactly.
And he was saying he has to make the West Bank probably of hotels like a location for people who want to film, and he meets them that way.
Yeah. And so now he has a boyfriend who they like have parties all the time, and the celebs go, but his famous friends come from pre that relationship. So, and I'm talking people like Kristen Stewart, Timothy Chalamet, Margot Robbie, Justin Bieber, Gigi Hadid, Taika Waititi, Channing Tatum, like, you know, really famous, cool people. And at the time that I first found out about him, I think he only had like 10,000 followers on Instagram or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so sad that the Instagram is gone. I'm so sad. It was such a lovely place to be to just see famous people pop up. But again, what is his charisma?
I mean, I think you're underestimating the power of a high networking homosexual.
Oh, you're right. I am.
Michael Brown, I saw in an interview, said that he was inspired of how to move in Hollywood by Lindsay Lohan. And he used the Lindsay Lohan model to meet people. And also, like, your man, Derek Blasberg, you know, he was in the fashion scene for as long. Like, he was the editor of style.com. I saw he edited Mary-Kate and Ashley's book Influenced. So I think he has been behind the scenes, and then he got like in front of the camera, we're doing some Vanity Fair and Condé Nast stuff and stuff like that. So I think it's like those overnight successes, you know, are a long time in the making. But
no,
I think it is the power of the high network.
But I just want to experience the charisma is what I'm saying, because I certainly do not have it. But I also have quite a discerning eye when it comes to, like, if I feel like someone is trying or performing or whatever, I'm like, you know, you're dead to me. Like, I've no interest if I feel any fakery.
Of course.
And I feel like a lot of those people would be the same. Like, I don't think Kristen Stewart is suffering fools. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like it's got to be authentic. America, is it? I don't know. I would be
Andy Cohen
there.
Or like Andy Cohen's a similar one. Like, where did.
Yeah, but Andy Cohen's very straight down the line. Like, I watch him on Watch What Happens Live. He's talking to celebrities. He's asking difficult questions. Like,
how did he get that job?
Well, I mean, that's honestly, he's written a whole book about that, Kian, so I couldn't possibly summarize it. But he worked his way up in TV. Yeah. Like,
so I feel it's a similar thing, like behind the scenes, and all of a sudden, by networking, you're in front of the camera, kind of thing. Yeah. You know?
Anyway, look, happy for you. Happy for you guys. And finally, just to acknowledge that Gavin and Stacey is coming back for a one-off Christmas special, which is big news for someone like me who absolutely loves Gavin and Stacey. Have you watched it?
I've watched Gavin and Stacey. I didn't watch the Christmas special, actually.
Yeah.
Was that good? It ended on a cliffhanger, and this should resolve the cliffhanger. It was spoiled for me, but I'm not going to spoil it if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So this should resolve the cliffhanger, and they're saying this is the final episode ever. And I think I might do a whole rewatch because I love the show. Like, it's
I'm
so
definitely
funny.
Going to.
And I say all the time, it's the drama make I love it. Like, that's
same. Me too. If you haven't watched, I actually had this conversation with someone recently, with my friend Donica, actually, it was. If you haven't watched Gavin and Stacey and you have written it off because you don't like
James Corden,
right? Which I know is the situation for a lot of people, don't.
Yeah.
It is so worth it. He is brilliant in it. He really is. His character, Smithy, is great. Every character in it is brilliant. Yeah. It's wholesome and lovely, but very funny. Like, I can't recommend it enough. I'm actually going away this weekend with a friend of mine who I don't get to spend a lot of time with because we live on opposite sides of the country. And we obsessively watched Gavin and Stacey during our heyday when we both lived in Galway. And I'm going to suggest a rewatch while we're away this weekend.
That'd be good. Yeah, we won't get through it all. Try and watch it by Christmas.
Yeah, because it's not loads of episodes.
3 seasons, I think.
And they're short seasons.
Yeah.
So, like, you can definitely do it. Highly recommend. And then you'll be all ready for Christmas.
Absolutely.
Kian, thank you so much. You really put the work in this week.
No problem.
And I appreciate it. Yeah. Where can the people find you?
I'm doing a radio show on RT Pulse every Wednesday called Club 96. And RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on the 17th of May.
I'm going to watch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I've got dwindling excitement for it. But,
I'm back.
They're doing it for charity this time. Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
Cast is unreal.
Yeah, cast is good.
Yeah.
Maybe we can chat about that next
time. Yeah, I'm back. Okay.
So yeah, that's over at sissy.pod if you want to find me there.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kian.
No problem. Thank you.
There you go, guys. That is the entertainment news for this week in the entertainment episode. And that is the point of this episode. So I suppose we better continue to do it. I am very much looking forward to seeing those of you who are coming to the live show tomorrow night. If you're listening on Wednesday in the Laughter Lounge, it's going to be so much fun. I'm actually really excited. What we have planned is going to be really fun. I know you're going to enjoy it. Don't forget, there's another live show happening in the Laughter Lounge on the 29th of May. So if you didn't get tickets for this one, or your friends weren't free or whatever, come and join us, because I'm building another really fun show for you guys. It's going to be completely different. So if you fancy coming again, you are more than welcome to. I will show you a good time, I promise. And don't forget, there is extra episodes on the Patreon. It's patreon.com/catchupwithlouisemcsharry. But that's also just a really nice way for you to support the podcast if you do like what I'm doing here. And I'd like to thank you very much for making it possible for me to get this new microphone that I'm speaking to you on, which I have found is much better than my previous microphone. So I ordered some more this morning. So hopefully you will enjoy a little bit of increased sound quality as a result of your contributions. Thank you so, so much. I hope you are okay. I have been struggling. I'm going to be honest. I went to the doctor this morning and asked for an SSRI. I also got on the phone to my psychiatrist about my ADHD and got a new prescription for my ADHD meds. I went to therapy today. I'm finally going to a physio tomorrow. I'm trying to face up to things and do all the things that I can to make myself feel better because I have been struggling. So if you are struggling, I am right there with you. And these patches will happen. It's a difficult time to be alive right now, I think. But I really believe that we'll be okay and we'll get past it. And I really believe in humanity. And I hope that we will also make it clear that what's happening right now is completely unacceptable. And I hope that eventually people in America will listen. I hope that as a people, we can be united across the world to say that this kind of thing is just totally unacceptable. I believe in us and I believe that things are going to get better. So anyway, I hope you're okay. If you're not, I'm right there with you. But we are going to put one foot in front of the other and we are going to talk again on Friday. And then we're going to talk again on Monday. And then we're going to talk again next Wednesday. And someday soon, when I say, even if you're not having a great time at the moment, you're going to say, do you know what? I am having a great time. Things have gotten better. Thank you to Acast for having me on the network. I will talk to you soon.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Flimsy stand slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.